Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm Dorian, and I want to welcome you to Highway to Scale, a podcast in which we explore the ins and outs of business success, and where we cover topics like validating business ideas, exploring different management styles, building products, launching them on the market, raising capital, and scaling your business. If this is your first time listening to Highway to Scale, here's a big fat welcome to our little community. And while we're getting to know each other, I want to ask you to click on that subscribe button and add us to your podcast playlist so you'll get notified when we publish new interviews. On the other hand, if you've been following us since the previous season, you know that we love and appreciate your support, so it's amazing to have you back with us as we explore new companies and their business strategies. In today's episode, I'm joined by David, who is the founder and CEO of Epion, a company whose platform supports businesses to empower, inspire, and nurture their employees through technology and employee benefits. Their integrated HR and employee benefits platform is more than just a CRIS. With flexible employee benefits access and visibility, as well as an advanced business intelligence module, Epion helps businesses support and understand their workforce like never before. As for David, he has been an insurance specialist since 2001, running the family insurance brokerage business in Dublin. He is passionate about helping small and medium enterprises maximize their potential through the use of leading-edge technologies and advisory services. In this podcast, David will tell us more about the challenges and opportunities within the human resources industry, the importance of data for business success, and the benefits of surrounding yourself with exceptional co-founders and team members. So let's cut the intro and let's jump right into the episode to see what David can teach us about building a business. David, it's so great to have you on Highway to Scale. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dorian. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's so great to have you here. Let's start with the basic question. Can you tell me more about your business career? How did it all start? How did you decide, yeah, I want to start my own company?
Yeah, I suppose, look, it goes back to, I suppose, my family roots. My dad has been an entrepreneur pretty much all of his working life. Where he started in the insurance industry, working for some of the big insurance companies, and then went out and set up as an insurance broker himself. And he bought and sold a couple of businesses along the way. And I suppose I got my inspiration from him, and he's someone I look up to. And he's, I suppose, he's my hero, let's say. So he's the guy who's given me the drive, determination to go and do something myself. I finished college. I went to university, and I finished university. And at the time, my dad had a company, and I went and I said, I'd like to work for you. And he says, no, you're not working here. Go get a job somewhere else. So I did. I went and I got some experience working around again. I got straight into the insurance business. And again, we're still in the insurance business. So I'm sure we'll cover that later. But my journey began when I finished university, went and worked around a couple of insurance companies, gained some fantastic experience. Got thrown into the deep end in a lot of places and learned to swim pretty quick. And I ended up working for my family business, Kindlin Insurances, up until I decided to take the plunge and go out and set up Epion with my two co-founders, Neil and Ernest.
That's great. That's great. Can you tell me more about Epion? What is it that you actually do?
Okay, so I suppose there's two sides to our business. So one, we are a SaaS product. We sell our software to companies, and that software is a platform to manage, as you previously mentioned, we manage a lot of the HR function, as in it's a platform database for HR to use to store their employee records, time and attendance, training and development. There's lots of functionality in there around the HR piece. It also manages the employee benefit side of a business as well. So it gives the employer the ability, and I suppose our target market, Dorian, we're looking and talking to companies that, you know, have a presence in more than one country. And the reason for that is because a lot of technology that exists out there is quite siloed. So if you're in the United States, or you're in the UK, or you're in Ireland, or wherever you are in the world, there is probably some really good local technology that you can avail of. But as soon as you hire people outside your home country, it's quite difficult to get that technology to work across multiple territories. So that was one of our key focuses. I suppose given my background in the insurance space, in the employee benefits world, I've been advising companies for 20 years around their employee benefits, both in Ireland and internationally, as has my co-founder, Neil, who's based in London. Ernest, our third co-founder, is the technology guy. He's based in New York. So again, we built this business from an international standing start. Ernest in New York, Neil in London, me in Dublin. And that's where part of the thought process came from, that, you know, companies should be in a position to manage a lot of their employee information, be it benefits, be it reporting, be it the HR piece. It should all come together in one client offering. And that's what we do. So we provide that technology to companies. The companies then give access to their employees. The employees can access all of their information in the palm of their hand. They can go in, apply for annual leave. They can go in and select their benefits. And we've a big, big, I suppose, part of our platform is the benefits piece. You know, again, with our experience in the benefits world, every country in the world has different benefit, a different benefit landscape, we'll call it. You've got local mandatory requirements in different parts of the world where, you know, certain types of employee benefits are mandatory. So you take the UK, for example, pension is mandatory. As an employer, if your employee wants to pay into a pension, you must pay into that pension also. In Ireland, we don't have any mandatory requirements around benefits, but we have to provide access to a pension if somebody wants to pay into it, but the company doesn't have to contribute. And then there are different, those scenarios continue around the world. And there are legislative benefits, and then there are benefits that companies want to provide. And then there are a suite of, let's call it wellness benefits, whether it's to do with mental health, or whether it's to do with discount clubs, gym membership, all the other kind of good stuff. And again, our platform caters for all of that. So I suppose what we say to companies is we can help you keep your company compliant in the territories where you have employees. But behind all of that as well, Doreen, and this is, I suppose, the other side of our business, we are licensed and regulated in Ireland and in the UK by the local regulators to provide insurance and financial services to clients. Now, if a company comes to work with us from a technology perspective, they don't have to avail of the brokerage services. They can a menu approach. They can say, we just want the SaaS. We don't want the advice because we have existing people in place who advise us and we're happy with that. But again, where we bring value is once the clients are using the platform, we can help them manage the administration behind their benefit offering. And that could be to do with flexible benefits. That could be to do with giving your employees choice. So again, if you have a population of 1,000 people on your payroll spread across multiple territories, you're going to have people in their 20s. You're going to have people in their 50s, maybe 60s. They're all at different stages in life. And what those people need is they need choice. So, you know, if you're in your 20s, you're not concerned about your pension. You're probably more focused on saving a deposit to buy a house or an apartment or whatever the case might be. People midlife who may have small kids, they might be like, what happens if I die? Do I have enough life cover? You know, does the mortgage get paid? So people at different stages of life need to be given choice. And if you have 1,000 people and you have to give choice, if you don't have a platform to manage that, it's a nightmare. You know, it's multiple spreadsheets. It's lots of phone calls. And then what happens is something somewhere falls between the cracks and the benefits aren't provided in a timely manner. So again, that's where a platform comes into it. And then I suppose on top of that, we also have partners in over 130 countries around the world we have boots on the ground and they work in regulated businesses all over the world. So from a point of view of providing benefits in any country in the world, we can provide actual boots on the ground in those countries. And again, we could be that central point of contact for the employer, and then we can get our partners to help us provide that, you know, financial advice and get those structures in place. And again, the platform can help manage that once they are in place. So that's, I suppose,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, a little bit of information about us and what we can do.
Now, David, this might seem like a funny question, but you talk a lot about benefits. What are your thoughts on, you know, ping pong tables, PlayStations in the office?
Yeah, I mean, look, I suppose, again, it depends on the demographic of people that you have working for you. You know, I mean, if everybody's in the office and they want ping pong tables and they want PlayStations and it attracts people to come into the office to get the work done and it doesn't distract them, then, you know, what's the problem? I mean, I suppose, you know, depending on where people are in the world, I mean, you know, there's lots going on. I mean, you know, I'm based in Dublin. I'm currently sitting in our office and we're in a co-working space where we've a small office in a WeWork building in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And the building has got very busy. There's lots of people around. Not so much on a Monday, not so much on a Friday, but during the middle of the week, there's a lot of people around, which is great to see.
Yeah.
But then there's lots of other office buildings around us where there's nobody in them. So, you know, mm-hmm. we've got some big technology companies around down here. There's nobody going into those buildings, which is strange. Mm-hmm. I was in New York a couple of weeks ago with Neil, my co-founder, and we went to see some guys in a very large building in Manhattan. And we were person number 7 and number 8 going into the office block. It was a 68-story building and we were person number 7 and number 8.
Number 7 and 8, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, but so the offices are empty, but the bars and the restaurants are full. So it's like, so people are happy mm-hmm. to live back in the city, but they're not happy to go back into the office. So, you know, again, you know, will a ping pong table and a PlayStation attract people to go into the office? I don't think so. But again, look, it's a choice. And I suppose employers need to understand the demographic of people that work for them. And again, you know, with our platform, we actually have we have an analytics tool built into the platform. So it's our own intellectual property where we built built out dashboards and we give the employer the ability to go in and run analytics across their data. So again, if you have a population of 1,000 people and you want to go in and you want to look at, you know, the average age by location or, you know, whatever the case might be, they can actually go in and drill down into that information. And hopefully that'll help them make better choices. You know, companies spend a lot of money on benefits. They spend a lot of money on things for employees. It would be great if people could actually drill down into that in more detail so that they could actually make better decisions. So that's...
Yeah, of course.
That's where we come in.
Now, let's talk a bit more about some of the plans that you have with Appian. What's the grand vision? What do you wish to achieve?
What do we wish to achieve? I suppose where we're going and what we want to do, Dorian, is we want to become a global leader in helping companies manage their benefits at a global level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just here to be a small little business that does well. We want to be a global player in the global markets. So that's the journey we've started.
When you look at your company now at this moment, what would you say were some of the, let's say, biggest milestones that you've achieved? What are some of the aspects that you're most proud of?
Without doubt, the technology. When we started the business, you know, when we decided in late 2016 to build out a product, you know, I'm a financial advisor by trade and qualification. That's my background. I've never had the experience of spending money on technology that was going to belong to, you know, to me. So when myself, Neil, mm-hmm. and Ernest got together and said, right, let's do this. You know, we put money on the table and we said, right, let's go build some really cool technology. I never in a million years anticipated what we would create. And we have created a beast of a platform, which is, I'm very proud of it. Very, very proud of it. So that's definitely one thing that I suppose, looking back, would have surprised me.
You mentioned you have two co-founders. Can you tell me a little bit more about the relationship between the three of you?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose the great thing about the three of us, myself, Neil, and Ernest, is that we are three different types of people. As in, our personalities are different. The three of us are at different stages in their lives. I always like mm-hmm. to tell the other two, I am still the youngest. I'm the youngest of the three. I suppose we all have different strengths that we bring to the table, but I suppose going back in the story, and you know, sometimes we do get asked the question, kind of, how does a guy in Dublin, a guy in London, and a guy in New York set a business up? So where that came from was, so when we talk about the network of over 130 countries around the world where we have access to, you know, financial services and advice in the insurance space, that we're part of a global organization called Brokers Link. So Appian is a member mm-hmm. of Brokers Link, and we have exclusivity in Ireland. We have partial exclusivity in the UK, And what that does is that gives us access to a community. So in my previous role in Kindland Insurances, we were members of Brokers Link. In Neil's previous role, where Neil was part of an international employee benefits boutique firm in London, they were members of Brokers Link as well. And that's where myself and Neil met. So myself and Neil were working with each other, servicing each other's clients. So Neil had UK mm-hmm. companies that had a presence in Ireland. I was working with Irish companies who had a presence in the UK, and Neil was looking after those clients. So there was that reciprocal arrangement, because again, you need local people on the ground who understand and have qualifications in that local market to make sure that the company structure, the benefit structures are correct and right, and that, you know, the company doesn't get in trouble with the local laws or regulators for whatever way the benefits have been put in place. So myself and Neil had that relationship for a long time, I suppose probably 4 or 5 years before. And we used to always joke, we'd be out for dinner, we'd be out having a beer, mm-hmm. and we always used to joke and say, look, we should do something together. Let's do what you're doing, let's do what I'm doing, let's bring it all together and try and do something special. And the conversation was always around, how do we stand out from the crowd? Well, how do you stand out from the crowd in a crowded market? You need to do something different. So the technology became that focal point of how do we become something different. And then we knew Ernest through Brokers Link. We'd met Ernest multiple times. We became friends with Ernest. And eventually the three of us had a conversation. We actually, the first time I ever missed a flight, I was flying from Dublin to Paris and I missed my flight because of security. And it was the actual initial meeting of the three of us coming together. We met in Paris. Ernest was over from New York. Neil got the train over from London and I missed my flight. Now, another airline took about 400 euros off me for the privilege of flying me out the same morning.
Of course.
And I did get there on time. But we started with a blank piece of paper and said, right, what are we going to do? We all shook hands mm-hmm. and I suppose the rest is history. So, bringing that together. And of course, there's always an element of risk. Does it work? Does it not? I'm always, the glass is always half full. I suppose maybe I have rose tinted glasses. I'm a very positive person. And, you know, I suppose, you got to take risks. You got to take risks in life if you want to do things. And, you know, I always say to people, anybody out there thinking of starting a business, you know, look, if it doesn't work, you can always go and get a job. You know, it's not the end of the world.
That is true.
If there's lots of people out there who've tried things and they haven't worked out and they've had to move on. And that's just life. And I know it's easier said than done because I've done it and, you know, so far so good. But, you know, if anyone's out there thinking of doing something, you know, just give it a go, see what happens.
What do you see? What do you see as some of the biggest advantages of having two co-founders next to you?
If I was doing this alone and on my own, I think it would be very, very difficult because, again, as I said, Dorian, there's both Neil and Ernest have different strengths. You know, they've got different mm-hmm. strengths to me. And it's vital that you surround yourself, you know, especially when you're trying to get a business off the ground, you know, you surround yourself with good people. And, you know, it's not just about the three of us. We've a phenomenal team around us. We've got great people with us on this journey. And, you know, there's a lot of great support there. And again, they all have their own strengths versus us, you know, which is fantastic. But definitely surround yourself with good people. And, you know, I suppose the startup world can be quite lonely, I think, if you were doing it by yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's always good to have somebody that you can talk to where, you know, we're all in this together. So it's vital. I would say it's vital to have some co-founders around the table because you're sharing the pain. So if there's problems, you sort them out together.
It's not
just up to you, you know.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned your team, can you tell me a little bit more about how is Epion structured? Who do you hire the most?
So I suppose at this moment in time, and we are recruiting at the moment as well. So if anybody's listening and they're looking for opportunities, we're looking for people in the SaaS world to come and work with us between customer success and sales. And then from a regulatory point of view in Ireland and the UK, you know, we're always keen to talk to people in the employee benefit and insurance world. So if there's anyone out there listening who would like an opportunity to work in a high growth business, reach out to us on LinkedIn.
We'll put the link into your careers
into the
description.
Yeah, absolutely. At this moment in time, I suppose we're probably about kind of 85% insurance and regulated business versus technology. But again, as I said, we've a great mix of people. I mean, we've got 25 people across Ireland, UK, and Australia. We'd like to get into the United States at some stage in the near future. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, we're recruiting at the moment, and we'll continue to do so.
When it comes to new people, what kind of people are you looking for? What kind of traits or values do you want them to have?
Depending on their background, we obviously look for experience and qualifications if necessary. Well, I suppose leaving those essential pieces aside, we look for people who we think will gel with the team. So people with a good outlook, people with a positive personality, and people who can work off their own accord. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the office as we know it, and I know there's lots of companies out there would love to have all of their employees back in the office. We as a business, we're very open to the hybrid model where, you know, yes, we get together occasionally, but, you know, if people are working from home, they need to be able to get up in the morning and get the work done. You know, so somebody who has a positive outlook, someone who enjoys, I suppose, you know, their own company and the company of others. And we're just looking for people who want to roll up the sleeves and get stuck in.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, let's talk a little bit more about your industry. The HR industry. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges of building a company in that space?
Some of the biggest problems in the HR world. I would say the turnover of HR people within the businesses that use the technology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, employee retention. Employee retention is a big issue in the HR world. And it always has been. And it's probably more so now than it was pre-pandemic, because there seems to be a shortage of qualified and experienced HR professionals out there. So that's definitely one challenge that currently exists out there. I suppose another challenge I would see in the HR world is that there's a huge amount of choice. There's a huge amount of choice when it comes to technology.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, again, you know, Dorian, just for me to be clear, we're not trying to take part in the HR tech space. You know, you've got lots of market leaders out there with huge budgets behind them from a marketing perspective. Where we're different is around the benefits and the analytics. Now, again, the HR functionality within our platform, your core HR functionality exists within the platform, because again, that data is needed for the benefits piece. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not trying to compete with the big guys. We're not trying to go out there and find companies with 40,000 employees. We're looking at the mid-market. And as I said earlier on, our sweet spot is that organization with maybe, you know, anywhere from 250 people to 5,000 employees in multiple territories around the world, because again, that whole silo technology piece. So, you know, that's a challenge for companies that are in that space, definitely, without a doubt. You know, so we as a business are not going out there to say that one shoe fits all. We're saying that, look, you know, we are quite specialist. We are looking and saying we are very much about that business that has multiple operations around the world. But we can bring that functionality and localization to the table as well.
Can you share some activities that you're conducting that help you grow your company business-wise, that help you gain new clients? What seems to be working the best?
Yeah, look, we've tried a lot of things. We've learned a lot. We've definitely learned a lot, and we've wasted a lot of time, energy, and money by doing certain things. I could talk about that subject for hours. You know, and that's part of the process, right? I mean, you have to get out there. I suppose what's working for us at the moment is getting in touch, doing proper research, not just going out and looking at companies and saying, okay, we'll take the scattergun approach. Let's go out and, you know, spray and pray, as we say.
Yeah.
So, you know, going out and actually doing some quality research and understanding the company that would have a need to talk to somebody like us. It is slow, but it does work. You know, we've got in front of some great opportunities at the moment where we've actually done that. We've gone off and done our research, and we've actually established they possibly have a need. Now, again, you know, it's very different. Right. You still have to knock the door. You still have to get through the gatekeepers, and you still have to get in front of the right people. And a lot of the times it's quite difficult to get in front of the right people. So you just have to persevere and keep going. But yeah, I suppose you know, everything from LinkedIn Sales Navigator through to, you know, just searching online, going in and looking at companies, following business newspapers, announcements about companies that have raised money. If you can, you can get data out of Crunchbase. There's lots of areas out there. I'm not going to tell you our secrets because obviously it's our process.
Of course.
You know, but, you know, look, you get lots of information out of places like LinkedIn, Sales Navigator, Crunchbase. And if you do your research properly, you should be able to establish companies out there that, you know, you could talk to. So that's what's working for us at the moment. We obviously want to increase that. We want to up our game on that side of things, and we want to mm-hmm. be more productive with regard to getting in front of more and more customers.
Yeah. And as you said, having, you know, foot on the ground in those different markets, it helps a little bit, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt, because again, there are lots of pain points. So, you know, pain points, especially in the benefits world. If you're trying to place employee benefits for a handful of people in a country that's across the other side of the planet from you, it can be quite difficult if you don't have the local expertise or access to the local expertise that are there. You know, what a lot of companies do, Dorian, when they decide to set an office up overseas, they turn around and say, hey, you know, Dorian, I'm going to send you to Singapore. You're going to go over and set up the office. So you go mm-hmm. out there and you might be the first salesperson on the ground, or you might be out there on an operations basis. And they say to you, look, you're going to go out, you're going to open the office. And by the way, you need to put some benefits in place. And you may know nothing about benefits. So what do? You jump on Google. You go, you find somebody in Singapore who can help you with benefits. But again, you know, how experienced is that individual? Is it just somebody who knows somebody? And what tends to happen is because the individual who's buying those benefits is only buying them for maybe themselves and one or two others. It's not done properly. Mm-hmm. The company don't hold on to the data. And then all of a sudden somebody comes along and says, hey, what benefits have we got in Singapore? And they go, who knows? We don't know because it's not on a platform. The data doesn't exist. And nobody knows whether it's compliant or it's up to date or whether the cover even exists.
So that's
a problem and a pain point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to switch the story a little bit. You have lots of experience when it comes to attracting outside capital. Can you tell me more about the process? What would be some of your insights? How to do it the right way?
How to do it the right way? Yeah, I mean, it's a huge learning curve, Dorian. I mean, when we started out, we did our first round of funding. It was the first time I'd ever done it, and I suppose I was lucky enough that I had a good circle. I well connected in Ireland, particularly, connected in good circles, and I was able to get in front of people, to convince them that they should believe in us and they should come on the journey. It's definitely very interesting. I suppose, you know, there are, you know, globally there are tens of thousands of professional capital firms, whether it's, you know, venture capital or angel firms or whatever the case might be. But I suppose something, I mean, if I was to start it all over again, I suppose, you know, just make sure you pick your target market correctly, mm-hmm. because there are lots of people out there that you're wasting their time, you're wasting your time, and you need to be very accepting of the fact that you're going to get a lot of no's. You're going to get a lot of people who may not understand what you're trying to achieve. They may think that your idea is crazy. They may think that it's never going to work. They might think you're going into a crowded market. So you have to be able to take criticism quite well. So that's definitely something that, you know, and it does. It's anybody who's been on a funding journey will tell you that it's not pleasant. It's not something that I could say that I've enjoyed the fundraising journeys, because, you know, you don't. It's stressful. You're trying to run your business at the same time. But again, if you surround yourself with good people, and whether that's your accountant or advisors or people who actually actively go out and proactively look for people to invest in businesses, if you can surround yourself with some of those good people and have some good conversations, it'll make the journey a little bit easier. But again, it's just one of those things, because at the end of the day, you're trying to get people to buy into your idea and your business, and that you're going to drive it to the next level. So it's always fun. And look, I've been told, you know, as soon as you finish your first round of funding, you move on to the next.
Yeah, that's true. What are your thoughts on bootstrapping?
Well, look, we bootstrapped. You know, myself, Neil, and Ernest. Look, we were lucky enough, I suppose, and for your listeners, I suppose, we're not three guys in our 20s. You know, we're three guys who are all 40 plus years of age. You know, we were lucky enough that we were able to put our own money into this and we were able to bootstrap it. So, I mean, look, if you can bootstrap it to a certain level, fantastic. But, you know, and again, you know, investors do like to see it, you know, especially when you're going in for the first time raising money. If the investors can see that you've already put your own money into the business, it means that there's a lot more on the table for us to lose other than having an idea that may or may not work. But again, I do appreciate that not everybody out there would be fortunate enough to have the actual capital to put into a business themselves. Now, look, we didn't put millions into it by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we did put sizable amounts of our own money into this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and thankfully, as I said, so far, so good.
What would be, let's say, your one key piece of advice for a young startup owner who wants to, you know, raise outside capital?
Surround yourself with good people. Make sure your accountants are good people who can help you, who can advise you, who can, I suppose, hold your hand a little. Again, you know, when you go out to raise money, you're going to need to produce financials, and whether they're projections or not, you're going to have to be able to stand over those numbers. You're going to have to be able to, you know, explain where those numbers have come from, how it works, and to be able to drill down into the details. You know, make sure you don't leave the details out, because investors will look for details. They look for lots of details. And again, every investor out there is different. We've seen it. You know, we've seen it with a lot of the VCs, that every meeting you go to is very different because you're dealing with different people. So some people are, you know, they're all about the people. They want to talk to, they want to know who the founders are. They want to know because they want to back the founders. And then you have other people who are like, okay, look, yeah, we like the founders, but what about the numbers? Do they stack up? Is there an opportunity here? And if there is an opportunity, can we get involved? So, you know, just make sure you pay attention to the details, surround yourself with good people. And I suppose just make sure you've got tough shoulders.
excellent advice. Now, we talked about your company. We talked a little bit about your industry. I want to focus on you, especially you as a CEO. Can you tell me what are you currently focused on the most?
Lots and lots of different things, Dorian. Everything from supporting the team internally, through to the finances of the business, through to the fundraising, through to the sales process. You know, we're still quite a small business, and a big part of my day job is selling. So, you know, reaching out to customers, getting in front of customers, dealing with existing customers, dealing with partners, and I suppose troubleshooting, fixing problems. Because every day is a new day, and there's always a new challenge. So, I suppose me myself, you know, probably 60-70% of my time is spent on sales. The rest of the time is the behind the scenes stuff.
Let's say when it comes to your management style, how would you describe it?
I would say I'm quite a fair manager. I let people get on with the work. They've a job to do. I definitely don't micromanage people. And I'd say I'm quite fair. I probably need to toughen up a little. In some parts of it, but I'm very fair. I would say I'm very fair. I don't know what the team would say about me, but I would say I'm quite fair. As I said, I don't micromanage. I totally understand that. People have a job to do, let them get on with it as best they can. And, you know, again, my door is always open. So it's not, you know, it's a bit of an overplayed team that, you know, the CEO's door is always open, but genuinely it is, you know. I've no problem helping people when they need help.
What would you say were some of the, you know, the biggest successes of yourself as a CEO?
I suppose keeping the lights on. You know, managing the finances of the business can always be tough, especially in a startup. You know, if you don't pay attention to your cash flow, you can the lights will be switched off without you. You know, so you really have in the early days, you really have to get a key handle around or a key focus and a handle around what your finances look like, and you know what your cash burn is like, and you know where the money's going. Because if you don't, you run out of cash quite quickly, and you lose your team. You won't be able to pay your salaries, and you know as I said, the lights will be switched off. So, I suppose, and again, look, I haven't done that on my own. I mean, you know, Ernest and Neil very much involved in that. I suppose one of those key strengths is just keeping, as I say, keeping the show on the road.
And if we flip the story, what would be, let's say, some failures that you did that shaped you as a CEO, that helped you, you know, to grow bigger?
The sales process. I mean, you know, we've gone out and we've spent money on telephone campaigns, email campaigns, lots of different things. We've outsourced to various different providers to help us do things, and they failed miserably. But again, it's all part of the learnings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you don't try, you never know. You know, and that's it. So there's been, you know, lots of failings, especially around the sales piece. So yeah, you know, you dust yourself off, you get up, you go again, and you move on. So yeah, I suppose that'd be it.
When it comes to attracting new talent, how do you make Epion stand out? What are some of the, you know, things that worked for you? How do you make sure that you get a lot of new talent that you can hire?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult marketplace at the moment. I mean, the great resignation is real. You know, so attracting the right talent, it's important for every business to do it. I suppose when we're talking to candidates, you know, we talk about the people within the business, we talk about the culture, we talk about the environment, and you know, it's all very positive. You know, we also provide we also provide very good employee benefits, given, you know, that we are an employee benefits firm.
We do provide
that. You know, look, we're quite flexible. You know, we like to think we look after people quite well, and I suppose we try and sell ourselves to the candidates to make sure that they buy into the vision and the dream. You know, we are a great place to work, and we're a good bunch of people. So I mean, there's no secret sauce. You know, I mean, look, we've interviewed lots of people recently, you know, to fill open roles, and you win some, you lose some. To date, we've hired a couple of people in the last couple of months, and thankfully the people that we've offered the jobs to have accepted and turned up. So I suppose that's a good sign, right?
Of course. Yeah, that's an amazing sign. Now, David, we're almost done with our time, so I have just two more questions to ask you. The first one is, as a seasoned entrepreneur, what would your advice be for new startup owners? Someone who is just looking to, you know, launch their product on the market.
My advice to those people would be to make sure that they surround themselves with good people.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to do it alone, do it alone. But if they think they should have co-founders, go and find co-founders. But if you're going to go and find co-founders, make sure that you have different strengths. You know, you don't need two salespeople in a room together trying to create a startup if you're trying to build a product.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, if you're going to try and build a product, make sure you've got a product person in the room. You know, again, surround yourself with good people, have good advisors, and keep an eye on cash flow. Make sure your finances are in order. Because it's not going to be an easy road, you know. And don't get me wrong, there's lots of stories about startups out there that, you know, they open their doors and they take off like a rocket. But the majority of startups out there will struggle with cash flow at some stage. And if you don't get that process nailed down from the beginning, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely difficult. Okay, last question. What can we expect from Epion during 2022 and 2023? What are some of your big plans?
So we're big plans. I suppose I mentioned earlier on, we're looking at going into the United States. So we're going for growth. We had a great 2021. We've had a great start to this year, and the future looks bright. We're going to onboard as many customers as we possibly can. We've got some big stuff in the pipeline.
Excellent.
And I would say expect great things, and hopefully we will become a recognized brand in the space that we're in. Because that's always a problem. You know, I would always refer to ourselves as probably one of the best kept secrets in the global benefit space. And that's not good. So we're going to change that and make sure that we're visible.
Get yourself known.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it. I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing how you grow.
Yeah.
It's going to be an amazing story.
It is, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. David, that's it. I really want to thank you for joining me on the podcast, for sharing all of these great insights about Epion, about your industry, and of course, giving, you know, all of our listeners and me also great advice for starting new businesses.
No problem. Thanks, Dorian, for having me. Appreciate it.
And we are done. But before you sign off, don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done that already, so you'll get notified when we publish new episodes. And leave us a review if you enjoyed this podcast and you learned something new. It'll be highly appreciated. And that's it. I'm Dorian. You've been listening to Highway to Scale. And I'll see you all in the next episode.